Good afternoon, and first I want to thank Antoine. I also want to thank Daniele. She's not here, but I'm still grateful to her for inviting me to come here. It's a great pleasure. As Antoine said, I work in integer programming, combinatorial optimization, a little bit of continuous optimization too. The title of my talk is Cutting Planes for Some Non-Convex Combinatorial Optimization Problems. As you're going to see, we don't have integer. Well, we're going to have a little bit of integer variables, but these models are in native form, continuous models, and yet we use a discrete optimization approach to tackle them. This is a little summary of my talk. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the problem that, or the class of problems that I'm interested. Then, a little bit about solution strategy. Depending on what Antoine is going to say, I may skip these slides here, or I may present. It's going to be up to you. Then I'm going to give you two major examples. So these are the so-called complementarity constraints or multiple choice constraints, and I'm going to talk about piecewise linear optimization. So this is the, by the way, it's 50 minutes that you said, right? Okay, thank you. Okay. So this is the problem that I'm going to be focusing on. From here to here, you have what is called a linear programming problem. You could also replace this objective function, this linear objective function, by a concave quadratic function or something that would be solvable in polynomial time. But just to fix notation, let's say that I have a linear function to optimize. And so from here to here, I have a linear programming problem. But in practice, linear programming problems appear with some combinatorial constraints that turn this very nice and polynomial time problem into a problem that is NP-hard. Now, the possibilities for combinatorial constraints are many, but I'm going to focus on a small number of combinatorial constraints that appear very, very much in applications. So if you're going to apply combinatorial optimization in industry, chances are that you're going to see one of these constraints. So the first one is what I called before multiple choice. Now let me explain multiple choice a little bit. So in multiple choice, you have a set of variables, and at most one of those variables can be non-zero. Now of course, if you can only have one non-zero variable, the problem is again trivial. You can solve it within a linear number of iterations. It's interesting, and that's how it shows, that's how it appears in practice. It's interesting when the set of variables is broken into a bunch of subsets, and each one of these subsets is, for each one of these subsets, you have a multiple choice. Now, each one of these subsets has a name, a technical name, that you're going to find, for example, in professional optimization solvers like a Gurobi or Cplex or SAS. They're called special ordered sets of type 1. So a special ordered set of type 1 is a set of variables in which at most one variable can be non-zero. I put two sets here just to emphasize that I'm not taking all the variables and enforcing that at most one of them is non-zero, but rather I'm breaking the set of variables into a bunch of subsets, and each one of these subsets is going to be a special ordered set of type 1. This is typically called SOS1. I'm sorry? They need to be what? Disjoint. Typically they are. They don't have to. They do not have to. But typically they are. In applications they are. And I'll give you one major, so I have a number of applications here, but I'll give what is perhaps the most famous of them. Now here's another one. Now I don't break the set of variables into a bunch of subsets, I could, but typically in cardinality constraints, you have that at most k variables can be positive. There's a lot of examples. Maybe the most famous is portfolio optimization. So portfolio optimization, I'm referring to the, yes. You mean here? At least one variable is positive. At least one variable can be, if you if the variables are bounded and you complement them, it would be the same problem. Okay? Okay, if they are unbounded, then you can't do the transformation. But typically, what you see in applications in their native form is something like this, that you have several options and you have to pick one of them. All right? Now here, I have that at most k variables can be positive. So like I was saying, maybe the most famous example is portfolio selection. Now portfolio selection, I'm now referring to the famous model by Harry Markowitz, in which one minimizes risk subject to a minimal return of the investment. But that is a convex QP, and typically if you solve it, the solver is going to tell you to invest like one penny in each one of the options or the stocks, and of course this way you are going to minimize the return, minimize the risk. But there are other constraints, and one of them is the following. When you make an investment, there is a certain fee, and that fee is quite expensive, and so typically you want to enforce that at most out of the possible options or out of the possible stocks, at most so many will be chosen. So for example, in Wall Street, typically you have something like 10,000 possible stocks, and you want to make an investment in at most 100. And so here, if the variables give the level of investment, you want at most so many to be positive. Here's another example, and it also is applied to portfolio selection, semi-continuous variables. So now a variable X is semi-continuous if it is either zero or it's greater or equal than a positive number. So there is a forbidden zone. The variable cannot be positive and smaller than this value L. It's again a type of constraint that appears a lot in applications. Now finally, and I'll talk some more about this later if I have time, I don't know, special ordered sets of type 2. So now again, you break your set of variables in a bunch of subsets. And in each subset, you enforce that at most two variables can be positive. And if two variables are positive, they must be adjacent. So for example, if X3 is positive, then X4 may be positive, but in this case, everybody else is zero. Or X2 may be positive, or everybody else will be zero. X3 being positive automatically will make X1 and X5 equal to zero. Now, all of these models, these are only four examples, and I only came with examples for two of them, SOS1 and SOS2. So these models, they appear all the time in applications, and there are several ways to formulate them. You can formulate them with binary variables. If I have time, I'll talk a little bit about modeling. But these are models that are pervasive in applications. Some of them, professional optimization solvers have special facilities. For example, typically you find special facilities for multiple choice. You typically find facilities for special ordered sets of type 2, and you typically find facilities for semi-continuous variables. So these are very important in practice. Now, the solution strategy that I'm going to focus on, so, you know, you can tackle these problems through a heuristic or whatever, but the solution strategy that I'm interested in is the so-called branch and cut approach. which is an exact method. I want to find either a proof of infeasibility or a proven optimal solution. Now, here's my question. Do I need to say a few words about branch and cut, or should I just skip? Okay. All right. So it's branch and cut. And for cutting plane strategy, and I'll tell you what cutting plane is in a minute, I'm going to refer to the old work by Crowder, Johnson, Padberg. Now, as you saw here, there is not a single integer variable, yet these problems are very combinatorial. Now, in the 80s, these guys came up with a very interesting cutting plane strategy. This was one of the very first few, one of the very first works in branch and cut, and this was done for 0-1 programming. One of the things that we did was to extend to this type of problems the strategy that they did. We used a lot of logical reasoning, and I'll show you that a little bit later. So another thing that we, another ingredient that we used is so-called lifting. I'll tell you about in a minute. Now let me first say what a branch and bound algorithm is. So as I said, this is a very combinatorial problem, and one way to solve it is by enumeration. Now, of course, complete enumeration is unacceptable, so we have to be smart to not enumerate all the possibilities. And the smarts of this approach are in the so-called linear programming relaxations. So all of these problems, as I pointed out at the beginning, this problem is a linear programming problem up to here. If you drop this, it's a linear programming problem, and such linear programming problem is called linear programming relaxation. And so the smarts of the branch and bound method is in the linear programming relaxation. By using linear programming relaxation wisely, one will be able to reduce the required amount of enumeration tremendously. Now, the required amount of enumeration can be quantified by the so-called number of branch and bound nodes. So by using linear programming relaxations within branch and bound, it is possible to reduce the number of enumeration nodes tremendously. And this way, we're either going to prove optimality of the problem or its infeasibility. Now, so that was branch and bound. What about branch and cut? So in branch and cut, we make a better use of the linear programming relaxation by improving the formulation on the fly through so-called cutting planes. Cutting planes are linear inequalities. As you see, our constraint set is made of linear inequalities. So these are linear inequalities that are implied by this system of inequalities and by the complicating combinatorial constraints. And so by digging some of them, we should be able to sharpen the linear programming relaxation, use it more efficiently, and in many cases, the reduction in the number of nodes is just phenomenal. Now, to be advantageous, so the most important parameter is not the reduction in number of nodes, but the reduction in computational time. So to reduce computational time, typically, if you're going to use these cutting planes, so they come with a price, right? You have to deduce them. They're going to increase the size of the LP relaxation. And so to be advantageous, typically, the reduction in the number of nodes from branch and bound got to be of the order of 90%. So if you reduce the number of nodes by about 90%, you're going to have a very good reduction in computational time, which is the main goal of this approach. It's to solve the problems within a small amount of time so that our ability to solve such models in practice is improved. Okay? So now, what about the cutting planes? As I said, the cutting planes are going to sharpen the LP relaxation, by taking into account these inequalities and these constraints. Now, I'm sure that it's not sounding easy, and as a matter of fact, it's very difficult. So there's a lot of theory, which we typically call polyhedral theory, involved in this thing, and finding such cunning planes is very complicated. Now, Crowder, Johnson, Padberg, they came up with this prize-winning work in which they suggested one way to obtain such cunning planes. So their suggestion, which was introduced for 0-1 programming, and they got this Informs Prize, which is called the Lanchester Prize in 1985, they were capable of solving some problems for GM. Ellis Johnson at the time was an IBM researcher. So they were able to solve this problem for GM, this real-life problem, 0-1 programming life problem that was considered at the time unsolvable. So they were able to solve using this approach. And, to obtain the cunning planes, they came with this very simple and yet very far-reaching idea, which was the following. As I said, the cunning planes, they got to take this guy into account and the combinatorial constraints. But this is a little too much. This is a system of inequalities. So instead of taking into account the whole system of inequalities, which is too difficult, has no particular structure, you just take one of the inequalities, and such a problem is called the knapsack problem. And now it's a lot easier to do, it has a lot of structure, and now it's possible to obtain the cunning planes. Now the work of Crowder, Johnson, Padberg also used some early ideas of Padberg, which consisted in the following. So now I have a knapsack. I have one of these inequalities in combinatorial constraints. Still, it's not obvious how to get the cunning planes. And so they came up with this approach called lifting. So lifting is basically the following. You have a complicated problem, and you're going to make it very simple, and then you're going to go back to the complicated problem. That's basically what lifting is. And so in lifting, you have an inequality, and what you're going to do is that you're going to fix some of the variables, and your knapsack is going to become very small. Now you can do this almost by hand, get some inequalities, and you're going to bring back the variables iteratively. I'll give you an example of lifting. A lot of work was developed for this in terms of 0-1 programming. We were able to extend such ideas for those problems, and I'll tell you how we did it. Okay? So now let me be a little more specific, and let me talk about multiple choice. So again, if you have two variables, multiple choice means that at most one of them can be positive. So typically they represent two activity levels of something, but you can only have one of them active. And so at most one of them can be positive. And again, if I have a set of variables and they are multiple choice, or another name is complementarity, if they satisfy complementarity pairwisely, I have here a special ordered set of type 1. And like I said, in a typical solver, professional solver, you should be able to find special facilities for this thing. Yet, if you're going to try to solve such problems in practice, chances are that you're not going to make it. We did something that I think improved our chances of solving these things in practice substantially. Now, before I go on and I talk about the cutting planes, I just want to remind you that one way to model multiple choice is the following. Let's say that each variable xj, so here I have a special ordered set of type 1, let's say that each variable xj has an upper bound of u sub j. What if the variables don't have upper bounds? There's a way out. It's not going to use binary variables, but there is a way out. But let's suppose for simplicity that they have upper bounds, okay? And the upper bounds are u sub j. Then you introduce for each binary variable one, I'm sorry, for each continuous variable or for each variable xj, one binary variable y sub j, and you introduce these two constraints, and now multiple choice is enforced. Because you can have at most, this is the special ordered set, you can have at most one of them positive, and so this is going to enforce that at most one of them is going to be positive. Okay? All right. So there are many applications. I'm going to skip this part, and linear complementarity, I'm going to skip this part. Previous work, I'm going to skip that too, and I'm going to go directly to some of the results. What I'm going to do is to give you some examples and some to illustrate what we did and then some computational results. Just a little bit of notation. This is a special ordered set of type 1. So remember, I have a set of variables, a very large set of variables, and I broke this set of variables into subsets. And so my index j denotes the set, the special ordered set that I'm considering. At most, one of these variables can be non-zero. Now, just for simplicity of notation, I'm assuming that all of them has capital T elements. It doesn't need to be so. The number of elements could be whatever. But just to simplify notation, I'm assuming that you're going to have exactly T elements in each set. So obviously, we want that T is greater or equal than 2. And here's a number of simplifying assumptions, which I'm just presenting here to simplify notation. I'm going to assume that my A matrix is non-negative, that my B matrix, and here I'm referring to this. This guy is positive, this guy is non-negative. And I'm going also to assume that I can scale the variable x so that it can be between 0 and 1. Now, in reality, we have done work in which these variables are integer, but just to simplify the notation, I'm going to assume that they are continuous, and I can scale them to be between 0 and 1. Okay? So I'm going to skip this. Now, here's a little more notation. I'm going to assume that the data, the elements of the in each special ordered set, they are ordered like this. There's no loss of generality. This assumption is just to make sure that the problem is not trivial. I'll skip this. I'll skip this technical detail, and I'm going to jump to some examples. So this should illustrate what we're talking about. So let's suppose that one of the inequalities I have here AX less or equal than B, right? Let's suppose that one of the inequalities is this one, okay? Now, I'm putting in parentheses the variables of a special ordered set. So these two variables cannot be simultaneously positive and so on, okay? Now, here I'm going to call a cover a set in which a set in which the variables don't belong to the same special ordered set, and such that, since I'm assuming that all data is non-negative, just to simplify, and such that the sum of the coefficients of the variables will exceed the right-hand side. This is terminology that we borrowed from 0-1 programming, typically from work by Egon Balazs, and the idea is basically the following. So this is what I have, plus the SOS1 constraints, or that for the variables in parentheses, at most one of them can be positive. Incidentally, I broke my notation here. I just saw it. So as you can see, this special ordered set has three variables, as opposed to the other ones who have two. That's okay. So in terms of the, this is what I have plus the SOS1 constraint, or special ordered set of type 1 constraint. Now, this is too complicated, so I'm going to do the following. I'm going to fix all of the variables at zero except for this one and this one. Now, if I make everybody zero except for this one and this one, I get this. Right? Now, you might be thinking, you got nothing. And I agree. I am, at this point, worse than I was before. Right? I have less information than before. But I'm going to take advantage of that. Now, what is the deal about this this cover thing? Well, I'm going to get a little technical now for a second. What's going to happen is that by fixing these variables at zero, I'm projecting my space into this two-dimensional space, and now I have a set which is quote-unquote full-dimensional, because exactly because 8 plus 9 is greater than 13, this is full-dimensional, and that's going to be a great starting point. But anyway, if you never heard of what I said, that doesn't matter. The fact is that, obviously, this implies this, right? So if I make all of these guys zero, I get this. Now, actually, I could have started with this, 8 plus 8x14 plus 6x24, 8x14 plus 6x24 plus 9x15 less or equal than 13, right? I haven't accomplished anything so far, right? So this guy here is just a little piece of this guy, the complicated guy. So I start with this guy, which is, a very simple guy. Actually, I started with this guy, and the reason I started with this guy was that with this guy, the complementarity or the multiple choice was being satisfied vacuously, right? Since this guy and this guy, so this guy and this guy, they belong to different special ordered sets, complementarity was being, or multiple choice was being satisfied vacuously, okay? Now here, multiple choice is not being satisfied vacuously, but it's still a very simple set. And now I'm going to do the following. I'm going to bring back to life this variable here. This variable here, x25. Now, here's the deal. If x25 got a coefficient of 4, if x25 becomes positive, immediately it's going to knock down this guy, right? Because they are multiple choice. Now, what is the most I can get here? Well, I can get at most one of them. I could get this guy or this guy. But the biggest number that I can get here is 8. Right? Now, if my right-hand side is 13, so actually I could improve my model by giving to x25 a coefficient of 5. And that is going to give me this inequality. Now, this is how we got, for multiple choice in particular, the so-called cutting planes. And the more general result is right here. Okay? I'll give you in a minute some computational results with this family of inequalities in the branch and cut approach, and you're going to see that this very simple idea still simplifies a lot, but it reduces the amount of computation required tremendously. Now, there's another type of inequality that we got. First, I just want to mention that this is what we call a lifted cover inequality. So in a lifted cover inequality, we start with a piece of the original inequality, and then we do some lifting. And the piece of the original inequality we started was this, and this was the lifted part. So incidentally, this is what's called lifting, right? I fixed the variables at zero, and then I got this simple thing here, and by bringing this guy back and using the combinatorial constraint, I was able to get something I didn't have before. And such inequalities, by the way, they are as strong as it gets. They are faster defining inequalities for the polyhedron that is given by the convex hull of the knapsack with multiple choice. So there's another family of faster defining inequalities, which are lifted cover inequalities, and this is obviously a lot more complicated, but so I'm not going to really talk much about it. But as you can see, this is the original piece, and the rest, they were fixed at zero. Actually, some of them were fixed at one, and this is the lifted part. Yes, Antoine.
Do you add all of them?
I'm sorry?
Do you add all of them?
I add all of them.
All of them,
yeah. But it turns out that a lot of them are going to be zero. And so both this cutting plane and this cutting plane, they're going to be very sparse, which computationally is a great advantage. Okay? And that's a characteristic of the multiple choice type of problems. Okay? So both cutting planes, they are very, very sparse. Okay? I took these two results from a recent paper that we just sent to math programming. That's why it's numbered here. All right, but I lifted all the variables, okay? All right, so let me just give an example of this guy just to illustrate. This is the same inequality as I had before. Now, if I take this cut, I'm sorry, if I take this cover, so this is the piece of my original inequality that I'm going to start with. So as you can see, each one of them, I have x22, x23, x34, and x15. Each one of them is in a different special ordered set. So multiple choice here is satisfied vacuously. Now I'm going to lift inequalities, I'm sorry, I'm going to lift the variables, and the first one that I'm going to lift is going to be x25. Now notice that I have, if I add the coefficients, I have 1 plus 3 is 4, plus 1 is 5, plus 9 is 14. So I have a cover. I exceeded my 13 here. But if now I bring back x25, I'm going to knock down this guy, right? And I had 14. 14 minus 9, that's going to give us 5. To get to 13, I need 8. So that's how I got this 8 here. So I improved this guy tremendously. Now, the effect on the other variables is that their coefficients are going to actually decrease, as you see from 6x11, x11 is not here. From 2x12, I get just one here, but that's okay because this is something I didn't have before, and this is a very strong inequality. As we show, it's fast defining. Now, let me now give you a little bit of computational results. And we performed some computational tests with this type of problems. We have a very powerful computational platform. So Texas Tech has this supercomputing center, which is one of the best in the U.S. And this actually has been two things have been really great to us lately. One is the possibility of using this thing, and the other is that professional optimization software now is free for academics. So I remember when I started doing research with this, that one license of CPLEX for academics was about $1,000. For industry, I think it's about $50,000. But for academic, it was $1,000. Now they come for free for academics. And so now we have been able to try to push the boundaries of what we know in terms of computation, because we got, and we do this computation with Gurabi, which is another professional solver. So we got about 300 licenses of Gurabi. So obviously, in the past, we wouldn't have the resource, the financial resources to do that. But now they are free. I hope they are not, I hope they don't regret that they made it free. But we downloaded 300 licenses. We put in the supercomputing center, and we have been able to do massive computations. And so we have been able to learn stuff that previously we wouldn't be able to. Now, we limited computational time to 1 hour of CPU, which in this platform is quite something. It's a very powerful platform. And what else? So we performed a very large number of tests. A very, very large number of tests. The first thing that we found is that these things to solve in practice, they are extremely difficult. So we had to, we only could solve problems that were very sparse. But that's okay, in practice, they are typically very sparse. They were relatively small, but we couldn't solve, even in that platform, anything bigger than that. We tested variables XIJ continuous, binary, and general integers. And we got some very surprising results for general integers. And here's the summary of our computational results. So the cutting planes, and that was our contribution to this problem, was the use of the cutting planes. Deriving and using the cutting planes. The cutting planes, they turned out to be extremely useful to solve the problems in practice. So the average reduction in number of nodes was about 98%, and that implied in a reduction of about 82% in average of the computational time. And I'll give you a few tables in just a second. We learned something. So these results, they were with problems with continuous variables. We did some tests with problems with general integer variables, and we got similar results. Now, with 0-1 variables, the result was mixed, but we were surprised that with general integer, these cuts which have no integer variables, they were so useful. So just to give an example, here's some of the results, and these are averages over 5 instances, okay? So in each row, I have 5 instances, and this is the size of the instance. So these are instances of the same size. They have 60 constraints or 60 rows in the A matrix, and the number of special ordered sets is 100 in this case. Now, if I take, for example, Gurabi, and I use the default, these are this is the number of CPU seconds that I need in average to solve them, to solve the 5 instances. Here we tried Gurabi just branch and bound, and we couldn't solve anything. Gurabi default, these were the results that we got for this particular instances. What if we add the cutting planes? So now I'm going to add the cutting planes. So I'm going to take this guy here, and I'm going to add the cutting planes. So first I took everything that this guy had, like its default cuts, pre-processing, primal heuristic, all of this. I took everything out, and nothing could be solved. Now I'm going to take this guy, this naked guy here, and I'm going to put on just our 2 cutting planes. And this is what we get. It's already a lot better than Gurabi default. If now we take Gurabi default and we add our 2 families of cutting planes, this is the result we get. So it's a substantial reduction in computational time. Now, I only have 5 more minutes, so, and I have about half of the slides, so I'm just going to skip all of this, and I'm going to give you some more computational results, but this time for piecewise linear optimization. So piecewise linear optimization, you know, is one. What is the big deal about piecewise linear optimization? Well, piecewise linear optimization is very useful in itself. For example, again, I thought I had, yes, portfolio optimization again comes to play. You have applications in auctions and so on. But its most important application is in approximating nonlinear functions. So you can approximate nonlinear functions by using piecewise linear optimization, and this way you can tackle some models that are very difficult in practice. So we did the same thing with piecewise linear optimization, and we got a number of valid inequalities. Now here the structure is different, but I want to call your attention that it's a similar approach. So we have a lifting, and this is the original piece of the inequality. I'm sorry, the original piece of inequality is right here. This piece and this piece, and by doing lifting, you get this inequality. I have a few others. I have a few others somewhere here. But anyway, this is an example. This is the original piece of inequality, and this is the lifted part. And sorry, I don't mean to give you a headache by doing this. I'm looking for the computational results. I think I passed formulation summary. No, I passed it, but I can't find it. Anyway, I'll give you summary of cutting planes. I don't know what happened to it, but anyway, I think it's here. Computation. No? Well, anyway, here's some computational results for piecewise linear optimization. This is a sample of the problems. Again, in each row here, I have 5 instances, and these are the averages. Now, this is Gurobi default with all of its cutting planes and all that. This is Gurobi naked, without cutting planes, without primal heuristic, nothing. In this case, it wasn't as bad as before. But now, if I dress this guy just with our cutting planes, we get this. And so, as you can see, the reduction is quite substantial. For these instances, we gave 2 hours of CPU time, and so because they were hotter. But as you can see, the reduction was quite big. For these other instances, this is Gurobi with everything, Gurobi with nothing. And Gurobi with everything plus our cuts was a lot better, but the best was this one, Gurobi with nothing and our cuts. And as you can see, the reduction in computational time was tremendous. For these ones, we gave 1 hour of CPU, so none of the 5 instances were solved here or here, and yet here, in average, they were solved quite easily, as you can see, in less than 2 minutes. Here a little more, but still, it was very easy. So I think my time is up. I hope I could give you some idea of what we do in this field. And now I pass back to Antoine.
Yeah.
So we generated randomly, but we followed a recipe that we found in previous publications.
From benchmark.
It's benchmark, yeah. But it's not